So Michigan has game number 14 for the first time in school history coming up against the Georgia goddamn Bulldogs in the Orange Bowl, and we are here to preview it. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
And I'm Alex Drain.
And before we go any further, let's talk about our lovely sponsors. The Amigo Podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have three retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grant, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers Podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, which is where we usually are. But right now we are at home because of COVID. But I'm still going to the game.
I was wondering where, like, if I was going to get you in Miami right now, or like where in the travels you would be.
Oh, I'm flying out tomorrow.
Okay.
So I was going to try to go to the GLI if it was possible, and I got to go to the part that's actually going to happen. So that's tonight.
We'll get to that.
But anyway, Georgia. Do we want to talk about Georgia first, or do we want to talk about the Big Ten title game? All right, Georgia, we'll start with the Georgia defense, which by many metrics is the top defense in the country. Thoroughly discombobulated Clemson in their opener, winning 10-3, gave up basically no points for the duration of the college football season. Then they got in the SEC championship game against Alabama, and Alabama put up 41 on them. So, and then you kind of go and you look at who they played, and there's a real case that the second best offense they played is Tennessee. Tennessee was 6-6 this year, or 7-5 thereabouts. And you know, then the second best team in their division is Kentucky, probably. They played Clemson. It was like, ooh, that's a big win. And then it turned out that Clemson was pretty bad.
Well, Clemson's offense is horrendous. Their defense was good, but boy, that offense was rough.
So there is sort of a like how much do we believe the historic numbers this defense has put up, and do we believe that Michigan has enough talent, enough scheme to overcome that? And it's a really difficult question.
So when you look at the Georgia defense, they're running at nominally a 3-4, but it's really more of a 4-2-5. They've got three down linemen on every play, and the big name up front that everyone's talking about is Jordan Davis, number 99, just an absolute monster of a man, 6'6", 340. He'll be going in the first two rounds of the draft. I actually really like Devontae Wyatt almost as much as Jordan Davis, number 95, who plays right next to him. Those are kind of the true defensive tackles. And then they pair those two guys with Trayvon Walker, who's more of a defensive end-sized player as their third down lineman. But they really get a lot of interior pass rush from those two guys in the middle. This is going to be the best interior pass rush Michigan has seen all season by a mile. The fourth piece of the defensive line, who doesn't play with a hand in the dirt but lines up at the line, is the Jack, who on this defense is Nolan Smith, former number one overall recruit in the composite. He's a really good pass rusher. And then they've got two traditional linebackers, N'Kobe Dean, who we'll probably talk about in a bit, and Quay Walker. But that front six, and this is the big thing that I'm watching, is they really rely on that front six to get all of the pressure that they generate. They don't blitz very much. They don't send a lot of guys from the secondary. And they got through 12 games this season with that front six and really that defensive line plus a blitzing linebacker just crushing every opponent they played. So to me, this matchup starts with how is Michigan's pass rush or pass protection holding up against that pass rush, and obviously the battle in the trenches on the ground.
Yeah, and so you know, one thing that kind of leapt out to me if we're talking pass rush is if you go look at sack rate, Michigan is second in the country, and the number one team is Western Kentucky, who, if you don't know, basically throws screens on every play. So like in terms of actual football teams doing downfield passing activities on a majority of their dropbacks, Michigan is the best team in the country in terms of sack avoidance. And Georgia's like 25th in sack rate, and that's impressive because, as you mentioned, they don't really do a whole lot of blitzing. But, you know, if there's a couple of areas where change the equation of like what your expectations for this game. I think there's two, and they're both about Michigan's offensive line. They're about Michigan's offensive line being able to pick up the front six. And then the other thing that kind of jumped out when I went over all their stats is that Georgia doesn't really get a ton of stuffs, right? Their power success rate on defense is middling. It's like 44th or something. Their stuff rate is similarly middling. Their line yards allowed is about, it's in the 40s. So it's good. It's a good team in all these departments, but it's not electric. But what they do do is they have, I think they're 10th best in opportunity rate, which means four yards or more. So they really prevent people from getting productive first down runs. And then they've given up a total of 3 runs all year of 20 or more yards.
Yeah. A stat I want to point out, I read in the 538 preview, Georgia allows about a half yard before contact on the ground this season, and they don't miss many tackles, which is what you're getting at in terms of preventing big plays. They hit you early, and they don't really make a lot of mistakes once they hit you. And so even if you kind of get past the line of scrimmage, the linebackers are really smart. They know how to fill the holes. One other thing I want to point out in terms of the pass rush for Georgia, they love to use that front six in different ways to disguise their pressures. So they like to drop the jack into coverage and then rush a linebacker. And you don't know which linebacker it's going to be, but it comes at you. And what it does do throughout this season is it gives the illusion of pressure, where the linebacker comes from wherever and it requires your running back to pick it up. And even if your running back picks it up, a lot of times it's N'Kobe Dean, 6'2", 210, 220, freakishly athletic, barreling right at the quarterback. And then at the last minute, the running back chops him down. But it causes a lot of quarterbacks to speed up and panic because they see a man sprinting at them and they don't necessarily trust their blitz pickups. And so you're going to need Cade McNamara to really trust Hassan Haskins or Blake Corum to pick those blitzes up, that fourth rusher coming from the second level who finds the gap created by the front three and then, take him out. And you can't have your quarterback panic when there's not anyone getting home.
Yeah, they use the old Michigan State twist blitz, the double-A twist blitz, where they, they spread out the defensive ends and all of a sudden, oh, good, Jordan Davis is in my gap, and then the center's got to pick those two. And Michigan really has, if they have one problem on pass pro, it's been some of those stunts where, the interior line misses a guy.
Well, yeah, but those are occasional events, Those, sometimes people are going to get through when they blitz. It's just in terms of, pickups, I feel like Michigan has been very good this year. Maybe not exceptional. Maybe not like the Ruiz on Wainu Bredesen interior line, but
yeah,
pretty close.
Their numbers look good because of Cade. We can get back into that when we do the Iowa game, but, that's my main concern.
He has something to do with it, but in terms of clean pockets, he's had a ton of clean pockets. So, sure. But and back to the ground game. So if they're not getting the stuffs, if their first contact's like a yard downfield, right, then you get a yard after contact. Like if Michigan can just get Hassan Haskins another yard downfield and then Haskins can get another 2 yards because he's Hassan Haskins, that really changes your equation, right? Because it's like, if you can get 4 yards on first down on a run, then you're not in an obvious passing down. Then you can run again. You can mix it up. You just can't put yourself in an obvious passing down. Then you get people to respect and come up on your run game. You get more at-bats for your guys to hurdle a fool, or in Corum's case, just to break into open space and outrun people. People talk about this Georgia defense and what they've been able to do, but the two of the top backs in the country are Michigan's backs. So this is good on good. And I wouldn't expect Michigan to dominate this, but there's definitely a possibility that one of Michigan's guys comes up with a play that nobody else has against Georgia because they are that good.
Yeah, I do want to point out too that Alabama is not exactly Derrick Henry Alabama anymore. Their rushing numbers not quite what they were early in the Saban era. So this is definitely the best rushing offense Georgia has played. So we're going to learn a lot on both sides of the ball in this matchup. One thing I want to say about the run game, I don't really want to see a lot of tosses where you're asking Andrew Vastardis to sprint into space and try and block N'Kobe Dean and some of these athletic linebackers. Like, this is a really fast front six, and those linebackers in particular are sideline to sideline Devin Bush types, and I'd much rather sort of run between the tackles and do the safe stuff, because that's the opportunity. If you're ever going to be in a situation to take a negative 4 yard loss, it would be that sort of play where you're kind of asking your linemen to do too much against linebackers who are just too fast.
Yeah, and then you start wondering about Michigan's predilection for end arounds and reverses this year, where you get guys going really fast in one direction, and they got big plays in the Ohio State game. They got big plays against Iowa, getting A.J. Henning the ball. And it's one of those things where they put it on film, so Georgia is probably aware of it. And so it's about timing. It's, again, about getting them to respect the idea that you are going to run it. There's going to be some downs that feel burned, I think. And then you got to pay that off, right? You got to pay that off with your Donovan Edwards 75-yard touchdown pass. You got to pay it off with your shots.
Yeah, I was talking to the George guy from SB Nation, and I mean, about like what's going on with their defense, and like where can you hit them, and what did Alabama do? He said the weird thing about that game in particular is Georgia went to a quarters defense for the first time all year, and like that, I mean, that was a reaction to Bama's passing game and the fact they got a Heisman quarterback. But I think what they were trying to do was copy the kind of thing that Arkansas did to Alabama, where they ran with that like Iowa State three high thing and try to slow them down that way. Obviously it did not work because that secondary not really up to that. My guess is not going to do that again, which then maybe puts the onus not on the running game but on the other side, or you know, see if we can get some downfield passing on them.
Yeah, one area I do want to highlight as we move into the passing component of this, Georgia, especially against Alabama, played a lot of off coverage with their corners, and Alabama really effectively used Jamison Williams in sort of pre-snap motion where he'd come across. And if your corners are playing 5 yards off the line of scrimmage and your safeties are back, you can pick up 5 to 8 yard chunks on those kinds of screens. All you need to do is get your wide receiver out there, set one block. And they were able to pick up chunks like that because Georgia was playing off coverage. I'm not sure if they're going to do that against Michigan, but that was an area I thought you could potentially exploit.
So, you know, being able to grind out decent gains on, you know, kind of average running downs is one thing. And then also, like, can Harbaugh up some stuff, you know? All due respect to Josh Gattis, like, he's the Broyles winner. They had great game plans down the back half of the season. I know that he's a big part of it, but you know, when I think about this is an incredible rush defense, how do you screw with it? I want Jim Harbaugh to have a pretty big hand in what Michigan is doing. And so there have been a lot of games over the past, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years where you come in with one expectation that Michigan's not going to be able to do anything. And then in the first half, they pull out a bunch of new stuff and they hang with them and they then hit a wall. Like, there have been Ohio State like games like that, the bowl game against Alabama, various situations where you're able to scheme yourself a chunk of yards and points in the first half. And then if Michigan's able to do that, then they have a defense where they might be able to make it stand up, or at least they're going to be in a game, and then they can put their hang their hat more on McNamara in the second half because they probably will have to. But like, I'm really looking at like what is, with a month to prepare for this team, what RPS is going to come out of the barn? Because like one thing that really jumped out from the Ohio State game is that Ohio State had a series of fairly simple rules about what they would do in certain situations, and Michigan exploited those to great effect. And Georgia's going to be better and more diverse, but if they have tendencies, how are you going to be able to attack those in the first few drives of the game?
I mean, the one thing that Michigan has not done, which is definitely in their DNA, is traps, right? Like, they like split zone. They like bringing a guy across and hitting that MLOs. But the, you know, letting defensive tackles come upfield, and then they've done it, like, just a few times this year. So, I mean, when you look at Georgia, that's what you'd want to do. If you're a power running team, that's what you want to do to a team like this anyway. And I mean, you've seen Michigan run that before. We know that Harbaugh knows how to run a trap play. So, my guess is we're going to see quite a few of those this time, especially with the bowl practices to get ready for them. Because, you know, the answer to a guy like Jordan Davis popping up field so fast is just run into him with Zach Zinner and problem solved, right?
Yeah, and other stuff like we've seen a little bit of this where you've got multiple guys in the backfield, but the other players have been tight ends. So that diamond formation with McCarthy, like, you have a whole month here to explore the idea of having Edwards and Corum together, what that means, or Haskins and Corum together, or Haskins and Edwards together, or all three, and throwing in some triple option something. I don't know what it's going to look like. Probably not triple option, but Michigan has a lot of weapons. And so I think, you know, coaching cleverness is going to be a big factor in this game. And there's going to be some down-to-down stuff that's just Michigan's regular stuff. But, like, you know, they broke open that Iowa game with sort of back-to-back-to-back plays that were RPS positives. And they had the unfortunate interception or they want to run Iowa at the building. And it's not going to be as easy against Georgia. But, like, I just look at this and I'm like, we have a month. We have a lot of different options. We have this is going to be a scheme win on offense if it is one.
You're also going to need Cade McNamara to play the best game of his season, really his career, I think, just because I watched two games for FFFF. I watched Auburn and I watched Alabama. And you could really tell the difference it made to have Bo Nix at quarterback versus Bryce Young, that Bo Nix just missed some throws that you can't have your quarterback miss if you want to beat a defense like Georgia. And Bryce Young, on the other hand, had some throws where he's firing at 45 yards down the field right into the hip pocket of the receiver. I mean, obviously you don't need Cade to do that probably because it's not very realistic, but he's going to need to make some throws, especially in that intermediate range. I think 5 to 15 yards down the field.
Is that unrealistic? I mean, we had this meme that McNamara shouldn't throw anything like greater than 5 yards or less than 30 midseason, because when he's been taking shots, there was kind of a couple of games where they didn't go well. And then the rest of it, like, it's like he's hitting Sanders still, he's hitting Johnson over the top against Ohio State.
I think, yeah, he can make some really good throws. I just don't expect him to be Bryce Young in this game is what I'm saying. I think that's a pretty lofty expectation.
Well, sure. But, like, I mean, what I'm looking at is, like, Michigan has one of the most explosive offenses in the country, right? And a large part of that is that they've been hitting downfield shots with consistency, both McNamara and McCarthy. So I don't think it's unusual or unreasonable to expect that Michigan hits a couple of those guys downfield. I mean,
no, I don't think it is either. And there were some alarming coverage busts from Georgia against Alabama. Part of it was Jameson Williams is a phenomenal player, maybe Ohio State's best wide receiver, and they let him get away. But Michigan also, if Georgia's making those mistakes, I think Michigan could exploit it. I do wonder whether Georgia had an Ohio State against Michigan scenario in that game, where the first quarter, when they were leading or really close, they were pretty crisp. And then once Alabama hit them for a couple big plays where it was really talent on talent, then Georgia just started crumbling. And there were coverage busts all over the place in that secondary. And it just really felt like Georgia had no idea what to do. They had trailed 20 minutes total in their first 12 games. Alabama punched him in the face, and they just kind of got scrambled on defense. And if that's there, Michigan is going to have some opportunities. You know, it's a matter of how far Kirby Smart can get this team to come, how much tougher they've gotten. But if coverage busts are there, yeah, Michigan can hit him probably, but we'll see.
All right, let's take a break, come back, talk about the Georgia offense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter. Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan, we're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy, it's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Everybody's in the play, and don't you know, it's a beautiful new day. Hey, burning down the avenue, see how the sun shines brightly in the city, on the streets where once was pretty Mr. Blue. The sky is living here today. Hey, Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong? Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong?
Georgia's offense is the less intimidating part of the team. They're also third in SP Plus, so not ideal. Again, though, definitely a bit of a played nobody situation here, because Clemson shut them down for 250 yards of offense when they were starting JT Daniels, and they crushed a bunch of teams and played Alabama, and they did put up about 400 yards against Alabama, but they were in deep catch-up mode for most of that game, and by the time Alabama had set themselves up with a three-score lead, their offense had really not done a whole lot, and then they're chucking it to Bowers and getting some things going. Look at the defenses they played. like, except for Alabama and Clemson, they're the top defenses they went up against this year are ranking in the 30s in SP Plus. So, you know, performance isn't linear. You are crushing the number 35 team. That doesn't mean that you're going to crush a top 10 team, especially if they have the odds on favorite to have the number one pick in the NFL draft in Aiden Hutchins. And you, in your FIFA film, pointed out a couple of dropback opportunities where Will Anderson, who's a pretty close analog to Hutchinson, except probably a little bit less powerful, maybe a little quicker, but same ballpark, were just going around those tackles. So if Michigan can force Georgia into passing downs, I think that's a win. Like, I think Michigan's going to get them off the field and hold them down. But that's the question, because they've been running 5-6 yards a pop for most of this season. And it's just like, how much of that is competition level and how real are Mozzie Smith and Chris Hinton?
I think what's really fun about this matchup is it's kind of the Spider-Man pointing meme in terms of the offensive philosophies, and that there's a lot of Harbaugh in Kirby Smart. And they've had some games this year, like the Michigan game against Washington, where Georgia says, if you can't stop our run, we don't need to throw ever. We'll just run you right over and then we'll leave and get the W. And so Georgia really builds its team around hitting you repeatedly with the run over and over and over and over again. And then eventually, boom, someone pops open for a deep ball on play action. That was the formula in the Auburn game I saw. The first half, Auburn did really well, hanging in there, doing enough to slow Georgia down for the most part. And then in the early second half, you got a play action, Ladd McConkey open deep, 60-yard touchdown, and that just broke Auburn's will. And after that, Georgia just paved them whole fourth quarter, barely throwing it at all. That's the game they want to play. And when they played Alabama, it was kind of like some of those earlier Harbaugh teams, like the 2018 one where Ohio State starts scoring touchdowns on you and your offense doesn't have that switch you can turn on to start scoring at the same pace as your opponent. And so this is a Georgia team that wants to get an early lead, let their defense do the work, and just sit on you, kind of like a lot of those old Harbaugh teams. And they don't really have a lot of comfortability opening it up. And as you know, the number is whatever the number of passes Bennett threw in that SEC title game was way too many compared to what Georgia wants to do. I think it was 53. That's not Georgia's formula. If they're throwing that much, they're in trouble. And so what they want to do is run it. And they do that well because they've got a bunch of really good running backs, Samir White and James Cook notably, but they've got a couple more beyond that, McIntosh as well, that they rotate them, they keep the legs fresh. It's a grinding running attack to face, especially because they're starting five guards at offensive line. Let's be real here. No guys over 6'4". They want to run the ball on you.
Yeah, they will rotate in Broderick Jones, who's like a top five overall left tackle a couple of years ago. I think he's at 2020. Anyway, they'll move him, and then they'll bring him in at left tackle and move Jamari Salyer, who's probably their best blocker, into guard. And I really think that that's their best setup, especially when they got Aiden Hutchinson coming. But they want to run the ball so much that that's why they run those guards out there. And I wonder if Michigan's going to force them into their secondary setup a little quicker because of, you know, you can't really just leave a guard out at left tackle with Aiden Hutchinson.
Well, and, you know, I went into the Ohio State game thinking that this, given what we've seen from this Michigan defense, given what we've seen from Ohio State, that there's no way that this ground game is going to go okay. Like, I expected Michigan to get paved by Ohio State on the ground, and that did not happen. And I think, you know, one of the main reasons that it didn't happen was that Michigan was playing their starting defensive tackles almost the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see that happen again because it's a playoff game and it's like, leave it all on the table here. So that sort of mid-season frustration where Michigan was substituting much, I don't expect to repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I mean, they're going to run two tight ends. So I wonder if Michigan's going to show their 5-2 look like they did against Iowa. Probably going to use more Ojabo than Harrell as opposed to the Iowa game. But I could imagine Georgia wanting to play two tight end, three tight end. They're going to like to muck it up, especially against Michigan, which might put us into that 5-2 look with Jenkins out there. And that, I don't know, maybe that changes the math a little bit because that look when Michigan's in it is more kind of a boom or bust for their line. Like, they either make that stop at the line for 0 yards or they're going to give up big, long zone runs like we saw against Michigan State.
Well, at Michigan State, that wasn't a 5-2. That was a 6-1.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And they have not gone back to that. So I don't expect that to come back. I mean, that was just a massive game plan screw up. But yeah, I mean, I really don't know what to expect, because Michigan's defense wouldn't really have looked like it was going to stand up against this Georgia ground game until the Ohio State game, but then they did that. And it feels like this could be pretty much anything, from a Georgia paving to Michigan holding them down to 3 yards a carry, and it'd be like, okay, that's a possibility. But I don't know. Bennett is a really kind of limited quarterback. If you can move him off his spot, his accuracy drops a lot. He's fairly athletic. He's kind of in the J.J. McCarthy zone as a runner. Like, he's not...
I don't think he's that like fast.
Well, yeah, but he's, you know, he's kind of in that middle range where he's a productive runner. Doesn't look like John Navarre out there.
I compared him to Shea of 2018, yeah, where they don't feature his legs a lot, but you remember when that season they do the quarterback keeper against MSU for a couple huge pickups. Like, Georgia's smart about that. They'll pepper a few of them in there to keep you honest.
Yeah. And then their receiving core, the tight end Bowers is a true freshman, has 800 receiving yards, almost doubles up the next guy in catches. And then they don't really feature a slot at all. I mean, they have a guy who plays in the slot, but he's more of a Roundtree kind of guy. They don't have a quick bugger who's like the target of a bunch of screens or anything. They have three kind of downfield receivers, one of them who's a 6'4" freshman, so he's kind of in that Nico Collins range, and the other guys are just kind of all-arounders. And they're athletes. They're all highly touted recruits for the most part, but they don't really get targeted because of the way that the Georgia offense operates. So they're averaging, all three of them are averaging about 2 catches a game. So what do we expect from Georgia if they have to pass some more? It's really unknown.
Yeah, I was texting with someone who isn't really super knowledgeable about college football, but's followed it more, and it was sort of saying, like, this feels like the opposite of Ohio State, where Ohio State, you go in there, wide receivers, wide receivers, wide receivers. And this game, you go in there with tight ends, tight ends, tight ends, and also running backs, too, that Georgia has lacked that alpha dog receiver. There's a wild card here with George Pickens, who was going to be a all-SEC, all-American caliber player. He tears his ACL in the spring, somehow is now ready to play football again, played a little bit against Georgia Tech and Alabama, entered COVID protocol. Now apparently he is released from COVID protocol and is practicing. He did not look like George Pickens of old in the 2 games he played, but when you're recovering from reconstructive knee surgery, another month of recovery could make a sizable difference. So we have no idea what George Pickens is going to look like in this game. If he's George Pickens that was the MVP of the Peach Bowl last year, that's a really game-changing development. If he's not there, then they don't really have anybody who is in that Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith, and Jigma tier at the wide receiver position. Whereas you've got Brock Bowers, and someone was tweeting at me today, and Michigan hasn't seen anybody like Brock Bowers this year. There just has not been a Mackey-caliber tight end on the schedule. There's been some good ones, Austin Allen, Kate Otten, Sam Laporta, but nobody like this. Bowers is big, he's fast, and if Bennett makes good throws and he high points the ball, there's really nothing your defense can do against Bowers. So you've got to figure out a containment strategy for him, and sometimes you can do that because the wide receivers don't scare you as much.
Yeah, and for Michigan, Dax Hill's availability is in question. There were a lot of questions at the press conference that were inevitably deflected to Jim Harbaugh. I think someone asked someone in the band or something, or is that a joke? It might have been a joke. I couldn't tell. Someone on Twitter was either being funny or the band was asked about Dax Hill.
Well, the band, I think, was flying today, and there were questions if Dax was on the plane with the band, is my understanding.
Probably a joke. So obviously Dax Hill would be a major loss, but one thing that was interesting from the Ohio State game is that Michigan coped pretty well against Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. Mm-hmm. Like, they made some plays, but they had to make plays because Michigan was defending them in very tight spaces. So they made some spectacular plays. And then it was Smith and Jigba who was the one who really got Michigan in trouble underneath in space. So there were a number of plays in which he was able to shake people free and just crush people's ankles and pick up big chunks after the catch. And Georgia doesn't really have that guy. So Yeah, they feel like
they got like the that. Junior version of that guy. They got Ladd McConkey, who is like the like you said Roundtree, but like Roundtree's a very effective player. I mean, it's not Jackson Smith and Jigba, but like I think McConkey is probably out of the receivers the guy who would be the most dangerous.
Yeah,
yeah.
But like, just in terms of like cheap yards, it feels like Georgia doesn't have a guy to generate cheap yards.
Great
running backs. They have Bowers. Like,
yeah, I will note that James Cook is also a receiver that we have to sort of talk about. That they run him out into the flat on wheel routes.
They're running back. Yeah.
Yeah. And I put this in my piece, but his brother is Dalvin Cook, and Dalvin played us in the Orange Bowl 5 years ago, and as a receiver, didn't go great. So they got to have a better plan than Mike McCray in man coverage.
Jabril Peppers wasn't playing in that game, and hopefully Jabril Peppers 2.0 will play in this one.
Also, the thing about Junior Colson is that he is definitively not Mike McCray. Like, there's a lot of things that, like, I put a sign on him this week because he had so much trouble, like, going the right direction. But whatever direction he goes, and this actually goes back to the defense for Georgia, too, because their linebackers are the same way, he goes fast. So, I mean, they've tried to run stuff on him before in coverage, and it just doesn't work against Colson because he runs like a safety. So, I mean, if that's the matchup, okay. I mean, that's what they want to do with Colson. I'm much rather them do that than make Colson try to pick through trash and find a gap.
There's also a tight end I want to point out here real quick, Darnell Washington. They don't throw it to him very much, but he's 6'7", and they threw him basically a jump ball alley-oop touchdown against Alabama that felt like, why don't you do this more?
Well, Michigan actually has the Darnell Washington secret weapon, though, because they have Andre Seldon. you may remember Darnell Washington from an All-America Bowl clip where Andre Seldon climbed the ladder almost literally to defend a fade against that guy. So easy peasy, put the 5'7" guy out there on him. We got it. Special teams, Georgia is better than average across the board, but not spectacular in any one department. Kickers 18 to 22 on mostly short stuff. Their punter has a big leg. He's averaging 47 yards a punt, but they've given up returns on about a quarter of his punts, and those are averaging 11 yards a pop. So if AJ Henning is able to field one, he should have some room. That might be a way for Michigan to kind of pop one open. They blocked a punt for a touchdown against Arkansas and haven't really done anything else the rest of the year.
Yeah, they do play all their starters on special teams, which is, I don't know, I'm surprised that the numbers are that good, because that's a lot of talent that's out there. And, you know, they're the kind of team that can just throw their backup blue chips on the field too. Like, here, five star, get some playing time. But I mean, Kamara has had, I think, the longest, because the way Georgia offense goes, they either get 40 yards or they get 0 yards. So, like, he's had a lot of opportunities to boom it from like the 13 yard line. And he's, his net, I think, is like tops in the country or number two or three in the country.
Well, I don't know. They didn't grade out that well in FEI, which is just basically, given your position on the field, how much did you net from this? And they were in the 40s or something. So,
yeah,
I don't know if there's a dropped snap in there that I couldn't find or whatever.
Yeah, special team stats are weird.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and one last look back at the Iowa game. Such as it was.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high-quality and low-latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute. They will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way.
Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Michigan 42, Iowa 3 in a typically competitive Big Ten championship game. The West has never won, barely ever keeps it within four scores. And, you know, this one was almost over after the back-to-back touchdowns Michigan popped out in the second quarter. And I honestly don't remember a whole lot of the second half because it was just kind of a party where it was pumping it up and whatnot. But did you discover anything of note for us?
Well, I mean, there are a few things. You know, on defense, Iowa's offense is so terrible, it's really hard to bring anything out. You know, the defensive tackles were real again. Turner was awesome again. Anything came close to landing near him anyway, but you know, when they chucked it way out of bounds, he was in good coverage when the camera got to him. Offensively, you know, they did some cool stuff. There was that huge run with McCarthy that I thought was one of several times that Gattis had like just a really good self scout kind of guessed what Iowa was going to do to them and just, you know, hit them with it. Donovan Edwards seems like such a fun toy for Gattis in particular. Like the things that he, the ways that he messes with people using Edwards, like that's his jam. Like that Gattis needs a guy like that forever. and like we saw it with the when McNamara got to have his third down run. Unfortunately, that was the drive that ended with a freak interception. But you know, that was that whole play was made because Edwards scrolls out and then everyone runs with him. The play where when he got the long touchdown pass, right? What they did is they motioned all out into the flat, and Iowa makes a bunch of checks because they've seen Michigan do this before, and they know that that is the setup for their running back screens, right? Like, Michigan likes to have two receivers out there and block the flats, and if Eric Hall's out there, like, okay, big red flag, that's going to be a screen. So they sold out for the screen, and the cornerback gives up on his receiver, stops covering Wormon Wilson because the cornerback's going to be the guy who's going to have to make that play if it's a screen, and then, you know, boop, right over the top. So, like, Michigan did such a great job knowing that this game was going to get Iowa'd for a huge chunk of the game, really. Like, Michigan was backed up and not really using their passing game and letting Iowa kind of do some stuff to them in run defense that we hadn't seen since Rutgers because they just didn't want to air it out from the, you know, 5-yard line. So getting those early points was huge, I thought. I thought that was... That made the game more of a, okay, Iowa, you can go in your shell, but eventually you're going to have to come out and score some points because we got a 2-touchdown lead on you.
Yeah, it was about to be 3, and then they had that freak interception, as you mentioned, right after an end-around from Henning that went for 38 yards. So that was looking like it was going to be another scoring drive, and that would have been curtains. And the rest of the game was just waiting for their offense to not do anything and then eventually punching in some more touchdowns.
Sure. And then at the end, Iowa kind of was given up. I mean, there was definitely a couple plays late where, you know, Iowa just didn't want anything to do with Michigan anymore. And we went heavy and just kind of burled them in for the last few touchdowns. But I mean, the plays early on, the way that they used the Henning end around was another one where, like, that was like Nebraska level backfield motion, right? Like, you've got, Corum going one way, got Edwards flying out like he's going to go for another, like he's going to be a receiver again, and so Iowa freaked out about that. The other thing is Iowa had a whole lot of, and this is going to go back to the Georgia game, right? With the Georgia scout, Georgia likes to have lots of zone blitzes, likes to move their linebackers around and bring them in places you're not expecting. Iowa has such old guys on defense that they can call those when you're like 3 seconds away from snapping. So
yes,
that was really messing Michigan up. I don't know if a lot of other teams can copy that because you have to be, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's one in particular where Campbell just signaled to the rest of his defense, like, Michigan set the protection.
Yeah.
And then the guy was just putting up an X above his head, and that was a sack on McNamara where you're just like, well, shit, more teams tried to do that.
Right, and that was part of Michigan, you know, grinding the ball down, so, like, they knew Michigan was going to set their protection with 7-8 seconds, and then, you know, they can set it with 3, and then Michigan either calls timeout or just has to survive with it. But Georgia was really good at that. Michigan was pretty good, better than I realized, especially Cade, we should talk about him a little bit from this game, at adapting. So, like, there would be a look that Iowa gave you where they messed something up right before the snap or brought a blitz, and Cade didn't know where to go with it. Well, the second time he sees it, he knows exactly where to go with it and, you know, hits them. There was one play, it was almost exactly the same exact blitz. It was from the same hash. And the first time they had Edwards out there, he misses Edwards and just has to kind of he has to run out and turf it. Second time he sees it, immediately, he's got Haskins this time. It's just an angle route. He just, you know, pop, there's the angle route. He knows exactly where the linebacker is going to go. So, I mean, this goes back to Cade McNamara. We went in after the game and like, oh, that was not a good game from Cade. And it doesn't stack up with some of his other ones, but it was better than I realized. And I think a lot of that was just he would see something, they would get him on it, and then he would adapt next time and get them on it. And, like, that's going to be your quarterback. I mean, he ended up with a 67% downfield success rating. There were a lot of those pluses that we add whenever there's a pressure. So, like, he was dealing with a lot of pressure situations, and, you know, half the time he did well with them, and half the time he got little, you know. But it was, as he adapted, Michigan's offense kind of broke out of its shell. And that's what I said, like, you know, when they were backed up and they couldn't really use their passing game the way they want to, that really hurt them because they couldn't get anything out of the fact that Cade had already picked up what they could do to him. Once Michigan got out from under the goalpost and that whole punting fest that took up like the second and third quarter when it was over, he just hit them with everything. Like every time they did the same thing that they had done earlier, Cade hit them, and he hit them again, and he hit them again, and then he changed something at the line and then ran a different play. And that was when the game went into a blowout.
Yeah, and I mean, anything really worth talking about on the other side of the ball?
he gave
Mozzie Smith a star.
Yeah, Mozzie Smith, I mean, that's been coming for a long time. I mean, Smith was going up against Linderbaum, which is, I thought, was going to be something that he was going to lose. And, I mean, Linderbaum was legit, but Michigan had a really interesting way of dealing with him. They just let him release, which they have not done at all this year, right? Like, they are very much a 3-4 philosophy team nowadays, where, like, the defensive tackles, their job is to hold if you have to, but don't let a guy get to the second level. Just take that double as long as you can. And with Linderbaum, they were just like, nope, go ahead. Find our linebackers. Help yourself. And then they just close ranks as soon as he was gone because they knew they could kill the two guards. And that's more or less what happened with the Iowa run game. It's like every single time Linderbaum gets down and blocks a linebacker, and then there's no way to get there because you got Smith two-gapping someone, or you got that five-man set, and Jenkins comes off and closes it down. Everyone on the defensive line had high scores. Hinton was a plus 10.5. Smith was plus 10.5. Jeter was all right, kind of quiet. Welshoff has a plus 6. Jenkins has plus 7.5. And then Hutchinson had kind of a ho-hum plus 18, you know, standard Aiden Hutchinson game. They didn't get used Ojabo very much. It was, you know, they went with that 5-2 look most of the game, which meant Jalen Harrell. And they had to kind of do that because Harrell had to play a lot of pass protection in the rollout bootleg game. And that was really the only real adventure, I think, in this game defensively was Iowa's bootlegs, which were, you know, Michigan was defending the stretch zone in a way that would allow them to cover the bootlegs if they were doing it right. But Josh Ross got taken away a few times. Colson, you know, you show him a shiny object and he runs very quickly the wrong way. And instead of just having the linebackers play him straight up, they just started taking those ends and having them shoot up into the quarterback. And at one point they just said, let's just use Barrett instead, which I loved. I thought that was perfect. Like, they weren't blocking him anyway, so there was no reason to have, you know, a defensive end style guy out there, and they just use Barrett. And the speed with which Barrett can get from the line of scrimmage to where the quarterback's rolling out just ends that play entirely.
All right. Any other thing that you need to get off your chest?
I hope they keep Brian Ferentz forever. I feel bad for Iowa fans that, like, you know, they had a pretty good defense. They had a pretty good defensive game plan. Everything else about their program is really fun. And, God, I understand having a game plan around Hutchinson, but, like, this was offensive. They just got killed. And, like, McDonald was just owning him. Whenever they really needed a play, Michigan got the play. Like, they knew exactly what they were going to do.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about hockey chaos.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together,
and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up.
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E, lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
By the time you hear this, will have been completed because it's one game against Michigan Tech at Yost. The second game was canceled by Michigan. It's going to be against Western. They canceled it for very vague health and safety protocol reasons. They have 5 guys at the World Juniors, which just got canceled. We don't know if Thomas Bortolo is available. Steve Holtz is injured. They're not going to be able to ice a full team. Why are they playing in this tournament anymore? It's not even at the Joe. You're going to have this happen every year. You're going to be missing 4 or 5 guys for important games. Just stop playing over break. Just stop. Don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, that was very clear to me several weeks ago that this was going to be a bad idea playing these games. And we talked about it on the hockey cast, and I sort of said, Michigan's getting nothing out of doing this. There's no tradition you're honoring here, right? I mean, it's the GLI in name only. It's not the GLI anymore. It's not a tournament. I mean, it's no different than a non-conference series. And you look at Minnesota. Minnesota schedules no games in this time frame. If you have to play a game, which you don't, you could schedule Holy Cross or someone like that, not a top 15 team who's going to be in the tournament. So it already made a lot of sense to not play these games. Problem is they were on your schedule. And so then you get closer to it, and I don't exactly know what happened inside the program, but the way they went about it, putting out that press release that says our game on December 30th against Western has been canceled. You know, I click on that and you're thinking, okay, it was probably COVID in the Western program, right? And then you pull it up and it says, due to whatever health and safety concerns in the Michigan program, but also our game against Michigan Tech on December 29th will continue as planned, was very strange. And I mean, now you've got College Hockey News writing about this, various coaches and players of other programs, as well as Western, whose fans are just sobbing right now.
their official account is like salty.
I mean, there's really no real explanation other than Michigan doesn't have enough guys to really compete against a team who gave their full roster all they could handle back in October. And they really wanted to only play, I guess, one of two games. And so they
played.
Well,
I mean, if they don't have six defensemen and you're gonna have to roll, I don't know. I mean, it's strange. It does.
It's weird. I mean, the only explanation I can think of is that Tech was one of the original GLI teams. Michigan has ties to Tech. Mel has ties to Tech. The Tech fans are still very salty at Mel for leaving. I mean, he got booed at the last real GLI by the Tech faithful. I think that they felt if they have to play one of the two, that they would rather play Tech because the consequences of canceling that one would be worse than Western, but I don't really know what the story is.
Yeah, and now that the NHL's pulled out of the Olympics, we're looking at college kids going to the Olympics for a month, which is like, how do you do that and also be in school for one? we're gonna see what's happened. I mean, Michigan has built themselves quite a buffer in terms of pairwise stuff, so I'm not too concerned if they have a couple guys miss big chunks of the second half. But
well, you know, I was tweeting about this and I said, look, if I'm Mel, I mean, remember last year they kept Owen Power out of the WJC. I mean, the coaches have quite a bit of power over their program. I mean, if I'm a college hockey coach and I'm staring down this possibility, there's no way in a million years I'd let a player leave. However, problem is Mel has built his program through elite talent. And if you want Rutger McGroarty and Frank Nazar and everybody else, you've got to keep coming. You know, telling Matty Beniers he can't go to China to play in the Olympics ain't a great look. And so they're kind of boxed in on that, depending on how it unfolds. But it's a pretty bad situation because you're not just going to miss 2 weeks for the Olympics, but there's going to be training beforehand. Not to mention, if you've read about the quarantining protocol they've put in for the Olympics, if you test positive in China, you might be stuck in China for weeks, which was the NHL's problem, why the NHL pulled out, because the players' union said, we don't want to be stuck in China for 5 or 6 weeks if we test positive. So there's a lot of moving parts here that's going to be very thorny.
I mean, Matty Beniers has years and years and years to play in the Olympics, right? Like, he's going to be a lock for the next three, but he can only experience the season in Yost once.
It does kind of suck that, like, I mean, how many interruptions are we going to have for this season? Like, we're not going to have this collection of talent together, you know, many more times. I know that the recruiting is bonkers, but it's
Well, there's bonkers, and then there's four of the first five picks in the NHL.
Right. And not to even get, like, half the season played because of that, and not even because the games aren't happening, but because those guys aren't even going to be around. It's just like, ugh.
Well, and we don't know how many college kids will go to the Olympics. We know that John Van Biesbroek, who's building the roster, wants to use more than he did in 2018 when it was only a couple. But it will still probably be some AHL, DEL guys. I mean, everyone thinks Strauss Mann is going to be the starting goaltender for Team USA out of the Swedish league. So it's going to be a hodgepodge of younger guys and kind of journeyman composition. So if you're picking, let's say, 10 college guys, not all are going to be from Michigan, so it might only be a couple players, but that still is bad for the season's trajectory.
Yep.
Well, it is what it is. All right, guys. See you on the other side.
Boris is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates Aruska, he hates a Volga, banned it from his home. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka.
Vodka,
he never drank a single drop. He hates Aruska,
Ruska,
vodka.
Vodka,
there's poison he swears to stop. He's singing la da 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 da. Then one day Boris was visited by demons in his head. And they said, bring me Ruski vodka, or your son may soon be dead.
Who's got it better than us?
No!